Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Alan had mentioned last night when we didn't have an intro to the broadcast because I was filling in for Darren that we really do because it's grandfather chiming. and I suppose when the weather turns warmer, I'll be back in the studio and we won't have the interruptions. You will, I trust, bear with us through this. It's just too cold to sit in there for an hour at the broadcasting equipment there and do this broadcast. So I'm here in the family room, and that's right where Grandfather is. Today is Wednesday. It is the 5th of April in the year 2006. And I'm glad you've joined us tonight. Our spiritual message is from the Course in Miracles here, from the text, page 76. I place the peace of God in your heart and in your hands to hold and share. The heart is pure to hold. The heart is pure to hold it, and the hands are strong to give it. We cannot lose. Let me do that again. I place the peace of God in your heart and in your hands to hold and to share. The heart is pure to hold it, and the hands are strong to give it. We cannot lose. And Alan Watt, thank you for being here with us again this evening.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Yeah.
I guess I should just say it's Jackie and Alan.
That's it, yeah.
You know, when I was reading this, I was thinking about Alan, that state of being, I guess, that we call peace.
Yeah.
It is difficult to remember and to knowing what we know that's going on today and the heartache that's in this world and the wars and the killing and the dying, and it's difficult to have that place in your mind or in your heart that's at peace.
I think that's the reason for it. I don't think it's a generation been allowed to live in any kind of peace or tranquility since the beginning of this whole system, because the control of government depends on war or having threats of war from others, and that's really the primary reason for being for a government. That was its first reason, supposedly. And
all the sense in the world, Alan.
Going, you know.
You know, when you said that, because you've said it before,
yeah,
it takes a while for that to really register.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even as, like you said, the borders.
Yeah.
They created national borders.
That's right.
And the only reason that we have borders is that we'll have something to fight, to quote, defend and protect.
That's right. And then the biggest scam is, especially when you look at Europe, they have the same families in charge of every country. And having wars with each other, the families never get killed off in the wars.
Of course they don't.
And yet that's the prime reason for pretending that they're the rightful rulers of those countries, that we're here to defend you. And so war has been essential for maintaining control over the public up until now. And when they have substitutes for war, there's many substitutes too. There's economic depressions and plagues and all the usual stuff they can conjure up to keep us off balance and subservient and fearful, so that we'll always obey and do what we're told. So fear is essential again for government to
yes.
keep, maintain control. In fact, government is force, like Washington said.
Government is force.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We always tend to forget that. You see, most law is accepted by the public when it's relatively peaceful, or at least if they can survive with an extra tax or a fee or whatever it's called, they'll dish out the extra fee or license or whatever, and accept that rather than rebel against it, because the threat of force is always there. So most people will acquiesce and go along with it, but they all know that force is there to back it up if they don't go along. You know,
I'm going to use an example that came to my mind. In Pennsylvania state law, and I think what got me looking into it was a friend in Missouri who told me what the law was there. It's the same law in Pennsylvania, and maybe it's the same law in every state, that commercial drivers have to have licenses.
Mm-hmm.
And it says it very explicitly. And so if a person is stopped and they don't have a driver's license, and they say, well, I don't have to have one because, you know, even if you quote the law and show them the law, and here it is, I am not a commercial driver. They take you to jail if you resist taking a ticket. It happens over and over and over to people. And so it just, even the stupid laws they have, it just doesn't matter, Alan.
I know.
It doesn't matter. They say, no, you have to have a license to drive.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And what they do, most things are done, first of all, it's voluntary. That's how they brought driving licensing in most countries initially. And then even road insurance initially was voluntary as well. And then once enough people have got it, then they bring in the democracy part. Well, it's a democratic system. The majority have accepted that. What's wrong with you?
Yep.
That's how they use democracy.
Remember reading about when the income tax was brought in?
Mm-hmm.
And I think wasn't it after the Second World War? And they were asking people to give a certain percentage of their income to help cover the cost of the war.
Yeah.
And it was totally voluntary.
Yeah.
And then they didn't stop it. They kept raising the taxes.
Uh-huh.
Pretty soon, income tax.
It's tradition. It becomes tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, people have gone to jail.
Uh-huh.
That have tried to go into the courts.
Mm-hmm.
And say, well, but this is a voluntary system.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not volunteering. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, no. Once they've got it on their books, they don't let it go. It's a tremendous income for them. And even though the reason for not taxing income prior to that was that a tax on income is therefore a form of slavery. That was in the law books. But they conveniently forgot that once they accepted it on the books. And Britain was the same. It was called the temporary war tax. That's how it was introduced. In
temporary war tax.
Yeah.
And people gave. And you know what?
Uh-huh.
I read about, it was some act, the Douglas Act or something. They passed the Congress here, and I think they allocated, I forget how many millions of dollars it was, to help rebuild Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And after Europe was all rebuilt,
mm-hmm.
the money just kept pouring over there, Alan.
Yeah.
Out of the, quote, taxes that they were collecting from the people in the U.S. of A.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a giant scam. I mean, finance has always been international. We must never forget that. And war is essential for the ongoing of their financing, and their interest is essential for the continuation of their system. If the interest was paid up, the banks would lose all power. So they must have ongoing interest all the time. Debt is essential for their system. And war, again, is partly a demolition job and a reconstruction job for their plans for the future.
Yeah.
That's really what it's all about. You know. And you see that in the Second World War, where they had plans. I mean, Hopkins, that was working with Roosevelt, had plans drawn up for the reconstruction of Europe. It even had...
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I was talking about. Go ahead.
Uh-huh. And they had huge plans for even city centers and what kind of stores would be in there, knowing the big chain stores would get in, first of all. And they had Japan all set up to be the producer for electronics for the future, which it did become. And they set up the Japanese banking system, where the government really is, acts on behalf of as the banker and gives out the loans to the businesses and decides who will get business and who will not. So that was all set and planned, at least during World War II, and probably prior to it, I'd imagine. I don't think Hopkins did it all himself. So, yeah, they had the whole future of Europe designed for United Europe. That was all part of the demolition job. Destroy the old and build up the new for a new era, you know.
And I don't know if it was in Creatures of Jekyll Island or where, because, you know, after you read so much and hear so much, but I recall that when they decided they were going to have a war, and they, well, that was Norman Dodd, of course, mm-hmm. Who testified, you know, to that legislative committee in Illinois back in, I think it was 78.
Yeah,
it got into the Carnegie records.
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't it Carnegie, Alan?
Yeah, it was the Rees Commission, I think.
Yeah, it was B. Carroll Rees, yes, Congressman Rees.
Yeah.
But and Norman Dodd was... he had a position on the committee, but he said when he went to the Carnegie Foundation, they said, well, you know, to see their minutes and that, because the Rees Commission was to study the foundations, to investigate the tax-exempt foundations. And he said they told him, well, we'd like to help you, but our job was done after the U.N., you know, after the U.S. entered the U.N., and they're all in some hard, you know, warehouse someplace. But if you want to go looking, you can do it. And
yeah,
that's what he found, that they were sitting there. It was, I think, 1906, decided that there was going to be a war, and they decided it would be in the Balkans. It would start in the Balkans someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they decided to do it, they said in 1914, well, we'll wait and until the Federal Reserve Act is passed in the U.S., and then the American people can pay for the war.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 1916, the Federal Reserve Act was passed, and in 1917, World War, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that when they brought the U.S. into the war? When did World War I start?
1917, they brought the U.S. in.
Yeah, it was in 17 that they brought the U.S. in.
But what they did, too, they brought over from Germany one of the Warburg brothers to be the head of the Federal Reserve in the U.S.
Yep.
And his brother was the Federal Reserve guy for the Germans.
Oh, boy, Alan.
And then at the Treaty of Versailles, the two guys that presided for both countries for the debt were the two brothers. What a joke, you know.
Yeah.
What a joke, yeah.
When you were talking about Japan,
uh-huh.
excuse me, being set up, you know, to be the electronics producer,
mm-hmm.
Sony.
Standard Oil of New York.
Standard Oil of New York, thank you. I couldn't remember what the S was for. Standard Oil of New York,
mm-hmm.
was the Japanese Sony.
Mm-hmm.
God, Alan.
Yeah. Everything is planned way in advance in the real world, not at level one reality that we're kept in here. In level one reality, we see the effects of things, and the media gives us the effects of things, but they never tell us of all the planning that went into it. It was the Council on Foreign Relations that introduced the income tax bill in the United States for Americans. That's who you have to thank for that. And in Britain, it was the Royal Institute of International Affairs that introduced it at the same time in Britain. The same club. It's the same group. Yeah. And this is the same bunch who came out on television here last March, a year ago, and announced the necessity officially, in their first time in an official capacity, speaking from the board of the Council on Foreign Relations. They appeared on our television, not as individuals or advisors or whatever.
Really?
An actual panel, saying we had to unite the Americas. And 1 week later, Mr. Bush and Paul Martin and Fox signed the agreement for the United Americas. So they're telling us that, that they were behind it. Yeah. This unelected government, and they are a non-governmental body. That's what they say in all their books.
Yeah.
They're a private organization.
Well, you know what the United Nations is called?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not a non-governmental organization. It's an intergovernmental organization.
They're actually a non-governmental organization.
They are. I know they are, but they call themselves
unelected.
Yeah, they call them
a private organization that was started up by the Rothschilds and Cecil Rhodes and Lord Milner back in the 1800s.
Yeah.
And they've decided our policy from then till today, and they have their international meetings. Politicians can become members of it if asked to be, but it's a private club, and they say that in all their books. They're a non-political, non-governmental organization.
The UN says that?
No, the actual Council on Foreign Relations.
Oh, CFR. Okay. I was referring to the United Nations.
Well, they're the same thing.
I know it is. It's non-governmental. But
yeah,
the
UN is always talking about democracy and how every country must be democratic. And yet I don't know anyone who's had a vote in saying who gets into the UN. We don't get any votes on it. The public have no votes whatsoever.
Oh, yes, we do.
Well,
Alan, yes, we do.
In what sense?
Well, we're... I'm being facetious.
Yeah.
The voice of the people are the NGOs.
The public really have no say in it.
No, I know they don't. But they say that is the parliament of the people.
Yeah, supposedly.
The parliament of the people, because almost everybody, for example, Boy and Girl Scouts are non-government, NGOs,
mm-hmm.
and they have, it's international, it isn't just in the U.S. of A.,
yep.
and they're part of it all. So every child that's in Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, anybody, any business that joins the, what the heck's it called? Oh, you know what it is. I was in it. Anyway.
Oh, the Rotary Club.
No, well, it's not Rotary. It's, businesses join it to be, part of the club. I was part of it. I'm just having a brain fade. They have in every tiny little town and city.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a state. Then they have national. Then they have international. And you get to looking at it. The hundreds of thousands of people who are members, it's not coming up, Alan. But anyway, it will. But that is considered to them the voice of the people.
Mm-hmm. And also the police chiefs associations across the world.
Yep.
They have their own organization attached to the United Nations. And the building codes of America, Britain, everywhere come from the United Nations, from plumbing to electrical to building.
They have international mayors associations.
Yep.
And I was thinking about the chambers of commerce.
Mm-hmm.
That's a biggie.
Yeah.
And you know what? For our listeners, in our section at Sweet Liberty on the United Nations, we have a thing there on NGOs. Alan, it just makes you squirm when you read it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you see, that's the Soviet. What it is, it's the Soviet system. That's what Soviet means.
A council.
It's government by councils. And in the Soviet system, it's the same as this one. The heads of the NGOs are paid for by the big boys like Rockefeller and financed by them. They pretend that they speak on behalf of the people.
Of course.
And it's the same with the Soviet system. The Politburo picked the leaders and gave them the political correct format. And, of course, they would demand on behalf of the public what the politicians wanted.
Yes.
So that's how, exactly the same thing. Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Because the bankers set up the Soviet Union and financed them through their whole existence. The West financed it, funded them. H.G. Wells and all the biggies and went over there. Royalty went over to the Soviet Union and got grand tours of their system. And of course, it was a big experiment on socialism, which is a form of elite control over the masses. That's what socialism really is.
I've got a thing here from the United Nations. It's one of their publications.
Mm-hmm.
And on the front cover of it, it says that the United Nations, their whole goal is to become a true world parliament.
Yeah.
And the three things they needed their own standing army.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they need the legislative. They need, just like the parliaments or the governments have, the legal, you know, the International Criminal Court,
mm-hmm.
the international courts, but they need their own standing army, and they need their own taxation system,
yeah.
and they have to have a parliament of the people.
Yeah.
And that parliament of the people is what we're talking about, the NGOs.
Right. Yeah, POP, yeah.
Yeah. POP.
That's right, Big Daddy, yeah.
I wonder if he's related to Uncle Sam.
Very possibly, because if you read Franklin's writings, Benjamin Franklin said, and so did Jefferson, about the U.S., he said, this is the beginning of a federation of states which will eventually become a world federation of states.
Oh, wow.
That was the function of the United States in the first place.
Yes, and you said that many years ago, Alan.
But they made it quite clear in their writings that was to be the beginning of a world federation. And Franklin said it would be a world run by a council of 12 wise men.
Do you know we've been doing radio together for 8 years?
Uh-huh.
That's a long time, Alan.
I know. Yeah.
That's a long... What I mean is, God, I just think it's so wonderful that we've had an opportunity to present this information to so many people,
mm-hmm.
and here we are still doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And until recently, we haven't had a single offer or made a guest appearance on any of the other shortwave broadcasts that were on the go.
Well, you're not getting them on, well, maybe you are, on shortwave broadcasts, but you're getting them on mainstream.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
I think it's just fantastic.
Yeah.
It's
just that's the other thing is, unfortunately, I always tell people we're under so much surveillance, and information is power, of course, therefore information has always been under lock and key. And why would the all-seeing eye miss the shortwave radio that claims to be so patriotic, you know?
You know what?
People should be really cautious about what they get from it, really. You know, it doesn't mean that everyone on it is deceiving them, but I'm sure many of them are as well, knowingly.
I know. You know, early on, I had been invited on different, you know, broadcasts to be a guest.
Mm-hmm.
It's been years since I have ever been invited to be a guest on any shortwave or alternative radio.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, it has. And I can remember when they used to do those symposiums, those expos, you know, survival expos and stuff.
Yeah.
All over the country. And they were all there, except me. I've never been invited. One time I even asked, because they said they were going to set up a round table. This is John Stattmiller and the gang, you know. Well, Clay Douglas and a lot of them, Jeff Bennett and a whole bunch of the broadcasters, and they were going to have a round table of the broadcasters and see if they couldn't come up with some type of a grassroots plan.
Yeah.
I said, God, I would love to be part of that. I have some thoughts. I mean, we were grassroots, and we did some work, Alan.
Yeah.
Truly did some work. 93, 94, 95. Right in their faces, And I said, do you think I could be on that? I think I was talking to Jeff. He said, well, I don't see why not. You know, I'll get back with you. I never heard back from them.
Uh-huh.
They didn't want me.
Yeah.
I felt so outside.
Uh-huh.
I'm being facetious.
Well,
I am.
The problem is, too, I think shortwave, I mean, I know it's been printed here in some of the newspapers a few years ago that the Christian broadcasting was set up in the 1950s to combat communist propaganda, and they used Christian fronts to do it, and the CIA set them up. And I thought, well, the CIA's maybe never let them go, because I hear so much. I mean, the Patriot business is a business. It's a huge business, and it's all fear-based selling.
Uh-huh.
Stuff for every calamity under the sun, and even up outside of the universe, even.
It wasn't a few years ago.
Yeah.
It was before Chuck passed away, so it's been at least 3.5-4 years. They were having an expo in Texas.
Uh-huh.
Excuse me, and I started getting calls from listeners to John Stattmiller's broadcast, and said, John Stattmiller says that you might be at the expo in Texas. I said, what? And sure enough, I mean, I heard from enough people that I realized that that's what he was saying. And, you know, what they were, our listeners were saying is, Jackie, they're using that to get people to come there, you know, people who want to meet you.
Yeah.
So I called up on John's program one day, and he had Clay Douglas on, and Clay and he were talking about the expo and everything. And I called up and I said, I understand, John, that you have told your listeners that I may be coming to the expo in Texas. He said, well, I didn't say you were. I just said you might be. I said, well, where in the world did you ever get that idea, John? I said, I've never been invited to one of the expos. And then John said to Clay, well, did you invite her, Clay? And Clay said, I actually hadn't thought about inviting her. I said, well, I just want to make it real clear to your listeners, I'm not going to be in Texas to the expo.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a few mm-hmm. who just are set apart, and I suppose we're set apart, Alan, because we don't pull punches.
No, I mean, you see, you can't get truth if you shy away from a certain holy areas, you might say. To get truth, you have to be willing to go across all or through all barriers to seek it. And, of course, they know themselves that it's a business, that it's a Patriot business.
Yeah.
It's a huge market. Fear-based selling is huge. And yet they can only do it on fear-based shows, where the sky's always falling every day, you know. And that's the sad truth about people who manipulate reality in order to profit by themselves, by very large amounts, I might add, you know. It's a sad... See, this is one of the conditions of humanity that has to be shown to the public. If this type of behavior doesn't change, nothing will change. The psychopathic drive within people to exploit others has to stop. Because if we don't stop it at the bottom, then what right do we demand that the ones at the top stop their exploitation of us?
Yeah.
We have nothing to stand on. And that's the basis of all of this. The psychopaths in society, in this civilization, as they call it, their civilization, gets to the top because they have no conscience.
Because they have no conscience. We're going to take a break here in about 5.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Pass Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free? Or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen, there's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and to our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188. Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite.
Okay, we're back with Alan Watt. Folks, I wanted to remind you that, as you heard, the broadcast is listener-supported, and if you want to send sponsor donations, please send them directly to First Amendment Radio. I told you this a week or so ago, that for our former shortwave listeners, our debt with WWCR is over. They were willing to make a settlement, accept what I had at that point in time. And for those of you who do listen and do appreciate it, please know that it is listener-sponsored. Alan's website, I want to give that to you to make sure that, in case you don't have it, it's there on the website at sweetliberty.org. Darren said the other night, I don't know when it was, that I gave our website as sweetliberty.com. I guess it's because yours is .com.
Yeah.
Alan's website is cuttingthroughthematrix.com. There's a video there. And I know that you'll want to see it. There's a lot of information there. And the books, the three books that Alan has written, there are excerpts of the books. Cutting Through the BS, the way it seems to me, that's not the name of them, but it's Cutting Through 1, 2, and 3. And when you go to his website, you can check out and literally read some of the excerpts from the books. And you definitely want to do that. And I want to remind you also that Alan is going to be a guest on George Noory. Alan, okay, today is Wednesday, the 5th, and you're going to be on the 10th.
Yeah.
Well, actually, in the morning of the 11th, but that would be Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. That would be Monday?
Yeah.
Okay, Monday, folks. And I mean, this has got to be, Alan, this is about the most exciting information that I've heard in such a long time. George Nouri, of course, this is the old Art Bell Show, folks. They're syndicated on about 400 or more radio stations. And Alan is going to be able to get out probably to millions of people. It's a wonderful opportunity. And it's on Monday, the 10th, although by the time we're listening, Eastern Time, it's going to be 2 a.m. on the 11th. So whatever your time zone is, in Pacific Time, it would be 11 o'clock. In Mountain, it would be 12. Central, it would be 1. Eastern, it's 2 a.m. On the morning of Tuesday. I'm staying up. I'm not going to take a chance on missing it. Alan, are you kind of excited about this?
Yeah, I was thinking about staying up myself, sir.
you mean you're not going to go to sleep and set an alarm clock?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. This is like a miracle to me.
Yeah, it's this is a long time of coming, you know, because we just plodded on sort of year after year, teaching individuals, really, and now it's coming to a stage where maybe we can reach a lot more.
Oh, I think, yes.
At a very critical time in our history.
It is, yes. And, you know, I am always saying, with God, Creator, all things are possible. And I do know that that is so. Nothing is impossible. And you and I have talked about this. You've said it yourself. They've never been successful in fully, you know, completing their plan. If they were...
They have built-in flaws that go with their personalities.
Huh?
They have built-in flaws that go with their personality type. And you can only get so much satisfaction lording over other people. And then you have to start to get something, a better opponent, you might say. And as they get closer to their ambitions, these people will have to start fighting each other. It's an Achilles heel. They can't stop themselves because they all seek ultimate power. And now they're seeing this world government come into view openly. They wanted to clear it openly to the public, but there's only one throne at the top, you see. And these guys would love to have a name chiseled in stone for eternity. They're always making statues of themselves. And that's when the struggles will begin.
And you said you think they're already beginning.
Oh, I am sure of it, actually. That's why I always say that human beings cannot handle godhood.
Cannot handle what?
Godhood.
Oh, godhood.
Yeah. Yeah, human beings can't handle it. They're too petty.
Yeah.
And it's never changed from the days...
Well, now it depends. If we're talking Jehovah...
Oh, all of them, you know. I mean, look at the Greek mythologies where the gods are always bickering and they're jealous and they're...
Yes.
And they play games behind each other's backs and stuff. And that's human nature, you see.
And look at all the stuff Jehovah did to prove that he was God Almighty.
Oh, yeah. And only a tyrant really uses force to prove the point. That's a very human thing. It's not a godly thing. And people who want to be gods, and these guys at the top truly believe they are, you know.
They're raised to believe that way, aren't they, Alan?
They're raised, and they also have an inner religion. We see it going all the way back to the ancient Rome. That's why Washington has a monument there. That's apotheosis. High Freemasonry, where you're raised into the status of a god.
What's apotheosis?
That's raising to godhood.
Oh, okay.
And you see the same things with the tyrants of Rome. They had their own ones chiseled and so on. And that's what apotheosis means. And because Washington started the kickoff for this final round of the New World Order, the Novus Ordo Seclorum, he's given the honor of being raised to godhood. It was the first openly Freemasonic national creation.
We're talking about the Washington Monument.
Yeah, and the creation of the U.S.
Uh huh.
That was its function.
Well, you know, I don't know if this is true, but I had read that when they were trying to get the Constitutional Convention together, mm-hmm. states just weren't coming into it. And George Washington, you know, had retired, and then when they started proclaiming that George Washington was going to be there, that's when the states at that time got their delegates together to go to the Constitutional Convention. Mm-hmm. And so that certainly would make, you know, give them a reason to raise him to godhood, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was an open, it was a closed door meeting when they didn't draft it up in that hall.
No, they didn't.
Because, I mean, we know that Franklin, during the Revolution, was the ambassador to France, and he was showing copies all over France long before that. So it was already pre-drafted, and they just had their little Masonic meeting.
Yep.
In that hall and closed the doors and guarded them from the public.
And nailed the windows shut.
Well, it's the temple with closed windows. That's the,
yeah.
The darkened windows. That's the Masonic temple.
Say again?
That's the temple with no windows. They have to always cover the windows in a lodge meeting. That's a Masonic lodge meeting.
Okay.
And that's why you had 55 of them in there, and only 33 had to sign it for the 33 degrees.
Oh my, I didn't know that, Alan.
Yeah. So it was an open Masonic.
And George Washington signed the charter for the first bank.
Yeah.
Gave him a 20-year charter.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So certainly, he deserved.
Mm-hmm.
Be raised to godhood, didn't he?
Yeah, he certainly played his part well. And he profited well because he gathered so much land during the Revolution that he
did,
I think, 10 times more afterwards. So his accountants were very busy.
Yeah.
But that's the reality of the world we live in. It's run by very high secret societies in collusion with very rich men in the world. And they plan the future. They always plan a future which they will always be in charge of. As I say, Franklin wrote in his own memoirs that nobody reads anymore, and so did Jefferson, that that was the beginning of a federation of the world. You know, and they eventually have a world council run by 12 wise men. That's in their own documentation. And who leads the charge for who brought out the League of Nations? It was
how could somebody read something like that when they don't even know it exists, Alan?
Well, it's
see,
there,
that's the point.
Yeah.
I'm putting myself back in the place where I was.
Uh-huh.
I believed, you know, as a child, when we were taught in history, mm-hmm. that he cut down a cherry tree.
Yeah.
And told his father, "Father, I cannot tell a lie."
Uh-huh.
I believed it, Alan.
Yeah.
And I believed he was a wonderful, our first president.
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln was my hero when I was in the fourth grade,
mm-hmm.
because he stopped slavery. And I memorized the Gettysburg Address.
Yeah.
Not because like it was a required thing,
mm-hmm.
but it meant that much to me.
Yeah.
So it isn't that people won't read that stuff. It does, they don't even know it exists.
Well, Hollywood has taken over the teaching of dramatic revised history. And of course, the visual with the emotion in it and so on has far more of an impact than reading a book by the actual author himself, you know, a Franklin or an Adams or any of them.
I know, but something has to be a catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
A seed has to be planted,
yeah.
Alan, for anybody, even a child, to say, wait a minute, that isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
Because when, I mean, you've known this stuff evidently, you know, since you were born. So I can relate to what it was like to be truly caught in that system.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I believed that December 25th was the birthday of Jesus.
Uh-huh.
It was the most precious time of the whole year for me, every year, ever. And it wasn't just gift-giving. You see what I'm saying, Alan?
Yeah.
So we lived in those lies. And until somebody says something to you, Alan, you blew us out of the... You blew us away. So far away. Well, you know, you and I talked on the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
You and I talked on the telephone for 6 months.
Yeah.
Before I invited you to come on. And I remember the first day you called me, and it was in 68. It was the summer of 68.
Mm-hmm.
And I answered the phone. It was after I got off the air. It was, you know, after 6 p.m. And you said hello, and you started talking. And I found myself listening to you. I had the phone pressed up against my head. And it was like I was listening to you with every cell of my body. And, you know, when I said, well, wait a minute, you know, why are we having this conversation? Why did you call me? And then after, you know, we kept talking, you kept calling, we kept talking, and I was like, well, who is this guy? You knew so much that it was unreal to me. And finally, it was in December of 1998. And I don't know what the heck we were talking about, but I thought, oh, my God, my listeners have got to hear him. And you came on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, as you remember, they kept saying, keep, bring him back, bring him back, bring him back. But, Alan,
yeah.
You have to keep remembering in your mind that those of us who are caught in that, it isn't because we don't care. It is because we don't know.
Yeah.
The ones, and then when you say something to somebody, like a friend that was visiting, when I started talking about, you know, the hurricanes and weather control.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, no, that's too big. That can't happen. Da-da-da-da-da. And I tried to explain, and he said, you're not going to convince me. I said, I don't want to convince you, but I would like to give you some information and hope that what you see will want you to look at it further, and then you will make up, you know, your own mind. But he wasn't even interested in seeing it, Alan.
I know.
So those are the ones we say, okay, goodbye.
Yeah.
You know, but it's planting seeds, and, you know, that's what you've been doing so beautifully. For all these 8 years, to Sweet Liberty listeners and people that call you and but it's so far out of your realm of, because you've always been, quote, conscious, that it's hard for you to relate to those of us who have been caught into it. And it's a tough damn pill to swallow, Alan.